Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Life Coach Chat, only on the Life Coach Radio Networks. My name is Tim Billiter, and I am joined by my co-host, Carrie Spaulding, the 30-something coach, and pain management coach, Bobby Anderson. Today's show is all about embracing progress over perfection. But before we jump into our topic, let's tell you a little bit about some upcoming episodes on the Life Coach Radio Networks. Directly following our show tonight, join professional development facilitator and coach Shannon Robach Scheinfelder and NLP practitioner Carl Sargent as they lay the foundation for mastering our emotional intelligence. That begins at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on our sister network, International Life Coach Radio. Just go to blogtalkradio.com and enter International Life Coach Radio in the search bar. And tomorrow, Wednesday, July 31st at 12 noon, it's Life Coach Chat with coaches Mandy Rozniak, Filomena Iorio-Tasaluk, and Leanne Parsons. Join them as they discuss being your authentic self, what that means, how you can live your authentic life, and what it can cost you if you don't. And that's right here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So let's start our conversation by introducing our coaches tonight. So first up is pain management coach Bobby Anderson. Welcome, Bobby.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here with you and Carrie tonight. Just to let folks know a little bit about me, I am a pain management coach. I work with folks who are in chronic physical and or emotional pain. And I begin to open up that window of helping them understand that sometimes our thoughts directly affect how our body is feeling and how our body reacts to injury and holding on to pain. And so what I do a lot with my clients is visualizations and meditations, and I'm also a hypnotist, trained hypnotist. So I'm able to help them begin a journey out of pain. If it has a tight grip on them, I'm able to help them realize how to release a little bit of it. And sometimes just a little bit is enough because there's a lot of folks out there in a lot of pretty heavy chronic pain. So that's a little bit about me.
That sounds both fascinating and very helpful.
Thank you. I guess I should mention my website. It is www.painmanagementcoach.com. And I have some free healing recordings on there, too, if anybody's interested in that.
Great. Thank you. So next up is Calding, the 30-something coach. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here with both of you and really excited to hear about what you do, Bobby. You know, what an important body of work you have for people who are really struggling with pain. And so I'm Carrie Spaulding. I'm the 30-something coach. And what I do is I help 30-somethings who aren't who or where they thought they'd be with their careers, relationships, and lives. So often my clients are experiencing what I call 30-something panic and feeling like they should have figured it all out by now. Maybe they thought they would have figured it all out by now. What I do is I help them use that panic as a catalyst to create what they want in their lives. And sometimes that involves navigating major transitions like career changes and breakups and big moves. And I also really focus on helping 30-somethings create and nurture healthy and satisfying relationships of all kinds. Another passion of mine is supporting parents with navigating children's emotional and social challenges and positive, effective communication. In addition to my coaching business, I was a teacher for over 9 years, so that's how that came to be. And I live in Philadelphia, and I do most of my coaching over the phone, which means I get to work with people all over the place. And you can check out my website at www.carriespaulding.com. That's CarrieSpaulding.com. And all my 30-somethings out there can reach me and sign up for free tips and tools on my website. And also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/the30somethingcoach. Written out, no spaces or numbers in 30-something. And I'm on Twitter also at @SpauldingCarrie. And I'm very excited to be here tonight talking about a topic that I see come up no matter what people come to coaching for or what goals people are working on in their lives. Just tends to come up at some time or another. So I'm excited to jump in with both of you.
And I'm so happy that you're here. So let's go a little bit about myself. Again, I'm Tim Billiter. I'm a New York City area-based certified life purpose coach, And I'm really kind of on a mission to assist people in developing thought processes and practical skills to move through life with ease and grace. I help clients realize who they are is far greater than they understand themselves to be, that they're never really alone nor disconnected from their source. And because of this, they possess far more power than they've likely ever been taught or imagined they have. And I work with them to tap into that inner knowledge and to develop their full potential to build the life that they desire. My website is DIYforYourSoul.com, and it probably to people it sounds far more spiritual than it is, although I do have a spiritual side to myself. But it's the DIY that really sort of called to me when I chose the name of my website, and I sort of see DIY as do it yourself. And sometimes, you know, like a project, if you're building a home, you know, you have to start with the foundation. And if you don't have a strong foundation, then you are not going to have a solid house. And it's the same way in life. If we don't build a strong foundation for ourselves, then what we build upon it probably isn't going to be that strong. So I really sort of see myself as a foundational coach, somebody to help you sort of like get everything put together and get that foundation built and then build on top of that. Let's see. As I said, the topic of the show tonight is embracing progress over perfection. If you'd like to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. We'd love to hear you, and we'd love to have your input on what we're talking about tonight. So let's begin talking about a little bit about perfectionism and how it holds a lot of us back in regards to reaching goals and even pursuing our dreams at all. I came across something years ago that's called the three P's. And those three P's are perfectionism, procrastination, and paralysis. And what my experience is, sometimes for myself and for other people, is that those three P's really block people from moving forward in their lives. And it kind of sort of works like this. Let's say you have a dream or a goal or a desire, and we set out to accomplish them, and then suddenly find ourselves unable to do so. And for many of us, that starts with the idea that, oh my God, I've got this stuff that I know that I want to do, and I've got this end point that I want to get to, and I know that there's all these steps that I've got to take, but I just don't know how to do them all at the same time. And I sort of, you know, I start to feel like I'm afraid, and I'm afraid that I'm going to fail, and I'm afraid that I'm not going to have the ability to do them, and I'm afraid that nobody's going to help me, and I'm afraid, you know, it becomes this thing of fear. And ultimately, it's sort of that, you know, we want the end goal so badly that we stop, we're not able to see the steps, and we want that perfectionism. We want it to be perfect. We want the outcome to be perfect. We want to be perfect along the way. And the problem is I think all of us deep down know that perfection is just not really going to happen. So what happens when we reach that point of perfectionism is that we start avoiding things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just don't do it. Or we sort of put our focus on everywhere other than what we need to be putting our focus on. A lot of times other people and their lives. And their, you know, we want to dig into other people's lives and their tell them how to get things done. Because really what we're doing is we're procrastinating, the second P. We're avoiding what we want to do because of our own fears. And when that fear finally takes over and we've so immersed in the perfection and we're so pushed everything away and we procrastinate for so long, we become paralyzed and we don't do anything. Let's bring our co-host into this discussion. Carrie, what, if anything, would you like to add to the concept of the three P's?
Yeah, you know, I think that perfectionism really is rooted in fear of one kind or another, and it can come from a variety of places. You know, on some level, often perfectionists are sort of living in a place of, I need to prove that I'm good enough, I need to do it right. And it's really, perfectionism is really a way that we try to protect ourselves. And it's totally understandable that we want to protect ourselves. It can be really scary to put ourselves out there and take risks. And so sometimes perfectionism can show up like, you know, if I prepare enough, I can make a plan that's fail-safe, that's bulletproof, or, you know, I can avoid ever having to be laughed at or to do it wrong or to, you know, to do it not, you know, if I avoid bringing it into the world, then it never has to, I never have to see it looking like less than it looks like in my imagination. But it can also be kind of come from a fear of success, right? Some people hold the belief if I do this and I do it perfectly, whatever that might mean, then I, like, what if I can't keep it up, right? So if you've had the experience before of doing something and executing it really, really well and succeeding by your own high standards, then you've just set yourself up to do, you know, to feel like you need to do even better or at least that well the next time. But perfectionism is really a myth. You know, it's perfectionism is a story that you've created about what success is. And so I'm really excited to kind of talk about how you can challenge that story. But before I do, I'd love to kind of turn it over to Bobby and let her add her thoughts here.
Well, you know, everything that you said is true plus, right? Tim mentioned how sometimes we turn away from making ourselves perfect when we try to dig into other people's lives. And in retrospect, sometimes we try to make things so perfect, and in our minds we manifest what perfect is, when we all know, because we've pretty much alluded to it, that perfection is interpretation. Because what I feel is perfect, and I could have a project perfect here for me, you know, Carrie or Tim, you'd walk into my office and say, I would have done this different, because my perfect and your perfect are different. And so that's why when we burden ourselves with perfection, it's like that does halt progress, because we do become, like Tim said, paralyzed, because we get caught up in our own story, like Carrie alluded to. So another way that I, when Tim was talking about people and how we go into other people's business and see what, you know, how our definition of perfect fits in there, we also allow others to influence what we feel is perfect. So we manifest this awesome idea, and we get brave enough to verbalize it, and then somebody has the nerve to criticize what we said. So that brings us right into that downward spiral of, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough, it wasn't perfect, I should have never voiced it. We set ourselves up for failure when we get brave enough to put it out there. So by not attaching the thought of being perfect to it, it's like fly the plane while you're building it, right? It's as you kind of stumble through things that you make such great discoveries. Some of the things that I've kind of sloppied my way through have turned out amazing and probably the closest thing to my definition of perfection. And there probably wasn't a whole lot of planning that went into it. I don't highly recommend that always, but, you know, it's life is a learning process. You know, we learn as we go.
I like the idea and the portion of when you were talking about, you know, when we fail, we're so afraid that, you know, someone's going to judge us in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it, we judge ourselves. We think that if we fail, we're failures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not necessarily the truth. I sort of use failure as a signpost. It's really me going along a path, and when I failed at something, it's a signpost that kind of says, oh, Tim, you've gone the wrong direction. Maybe you need to turn around and try something different. Maybe you need to view something different. Maybe you need to change your belief system a little bit or your thoughts a little bit. But, you know, I think we're going to talk about this a little more in depth later, but I think failure is really just, you know, it's part of success.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know anybody who's succeeded without failing along the lines, myself included.
Yeah.
Bobby, I'd be interested to know, how does perfectionism play into pain management?
Well, sadly, when you try to be perfect, when you try to do everything perfect, does that stress you out? Right? There's no stress in being perfect, guys, right? No. So consequently, when you have had trauma in your life, if your body has encountered trauma, accident, whatever, even if it's emotional, because I deal with probably a larger percentage of my folks are come to me with chronic emotional pain versus chronic physical pain, because I work with many of them virtually using meditations and visualizations. But the fact of the matter is almost every person in chronic pain, I can promise you, is a perfectionist. is somebody that doesn't want to put any verbiage out there, any product out there, anything out there if it isn't their definition of perfect. So when I even say that word perfect, my back tenses up. I sit up straighter. You know, everything about that word has a visceral reaction to it, right? If you say, oh, I did things relaxed and I kind of, you know, tried this and tried that and experimented with this, like my body feels better when I say those words. But if I start saying perfect and judgment and all of that, my body gets rigid, and a rigid body is going to hold on to pain.
So what I'm hearing is that it's very common. It's actually very common in your practice.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
How about you, Carrie? How does it play a role in your practice or in the life of anybody that you know?
Yeah, well, so I love sort of hearing how it's showing up in your pain management coaching, Bobby. And I find that many of the people that I work with have a little perfectionist friend living inside of them who speaks up at different times along the path. And you know, one thing is that I tend to, not certainly not exclusively, but I do work with a lot of creative types. So I work with a lot of people who are either in career transition or they're wanting to be more active in whatever their passion is. And so sometimes perfectionism will come up with writers and artistic folks in the form of procrastination. I think we might talk a little bit more about procrastination later. But again, it's this idea of whatever I put out there will never match the picture in my head, or whatever I want to put out there is so overwhelming when I think about how I want it to turn out that it's really hard to get into action. Another thing that, another kind of way that perfectionism can show up is that when we're making big changes in our lives, often certain actions that we're planning to take or types of actions that we're planning to take feel very, very high stakes. And so when we're telling ourselves the story of this is the opportunity, this is make or break, this is my opportunity, singular, right? Like I get one chance to meet with a person like this or to have this kind of an interview or whatever it is, when we're telling ourselves that story, the pressure to be perfect is so much greater. And so I see a lot of the stress and the tension coming up when we're telling that story of this is a really high stakes opportunity. And it shows up in relationships. Interestingly enough, perfectionism in relationships can often kind of bring up control because, again, it goes back to this idea of we want to be able to plan and craft our communication perfectly. We want to be able to protect ourselves from rejection if we're dating. You know, we want to be able to really control our lives. And we sometimes think that we can control them. And so sometimes we're very invested in trying to kind of do it perfectly. And, I mean, the idea of what is dating perfectly, really, or what is a perfect fight? It's a sort of impossible thing to be reaching for. But sometimes that's where it can show up, too, of, like, is there really such a thing as right? I want to do it right. And I certainly have experienced that in my own life. I'll notice myself, or when I'm lucky, somebody else who is in my support system will notice me doing that, sort of holding that belief that there is one right way to do this, there is one perfect way to do this, and I have to figure out what it is, versus, you know, there are lots of ways to do this, and I'm going to find my way to the way that's right for me, which is a very different mindset.
Yeah, I've come across a lot of people over in my time where perfectionism is sort of an outgrowth of a very chaotic childhood. And, you know, things were so bad in childhood that the way that you, and you mentioned the word, Carrie, you want to control everything. And you know, because you grew up with such chaos that the only way to feel safe in your life is to put it all in a box and control it. And then, you know, when you're trying to control everything, perfectionism just sneaks right in, whether you realize it or you don't, because perfectionism is in a sense a form of control. You know, if we think that we can control all the outcomes and we think that we can, you know, control how it's going to happen. And I can recall, even in my own life, that there was a time when any time that I would have to have a conversation with somebody, and especially one of those big conversations that you were talking about, Carrie, I would actually try and script it all out in my head first.
Mm-hmm,
and the thing
mm-hmm.
about it is, I would actually script out the other person's responses. How do you think that conversation went when that person went off script?
Right, yeah, that's not your line. Here, let me give you your script.
then I just found myself sitting there thinking, well, I don't really know what to say because I got to re-script this in my head.
Oh my God, I love it.
It never worked. And then I always kind of wondered. I was frustrated, and I see that in other people as well. They go through lives, and people I've assisted along the way, either clients or in other ways that I've helped people out, and, you know, I've seen them get so stuck in the idea that they think that they know how it's supposed to go, and they think that they can control all the aspects of it, and they can't. And then when they start to realize that they can't, then they get scared. And that's sort of where I found the procrastination sort of slips in, you know, on a big time basis, you know, because at that point in time, oh wow, now what am I going to do?
And Tara, I love your example of the scripting conversations, and it's one that I bet is resonating with many of our listeners out there. A lot of the sort of the one thing that I would recommend. And it sounds like a sort of vague concept. There's sort of specific ways that you can do this, but is a great sort of remedy for procrastination is developing your trust in yourself that you will handle it, right? That you'll handle it in the moment, that whatever comes your way, you're going to be able to handle it. When you don't have that trust in yourself or in your partner, right, if it has to do with a conversation that you're going to have with somebody else, that's where that really high degree for control can come in, because we need to protect ourselves. We need to be safe. If we mess it up, oh, God, you know, we're not going to be able to handle it.
Right.
Well,
go ahead, Bobby.
Well, what I have found is that's been interesting with experiences I've had with clients is that as you develop your relationship and your rapport gets more comfortable and you begin to point out, you know, possibly the only control, you know, possibly the only thing that we can really control in this world is ourselves and how we react to things. And people are completely and totally threatened when you begin to suggest that they can't control other people or they can't control other situations. The prospect of not having that control to make it their own perfect is like terrifying for them.
You know, the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous is that you're powerless over alcohol. And when you tell people at first, and I actually am not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know a bit about it, but I've heard people talk about when they go out and they talk about being powerless over alcohol, it almost makes people angry.
Mm.
The mm-hmm. idea that what do you mean I'm powerless over it? What do you mean that I can't control this? And I don't think that just happens in alcoholism. I think it happens in a lot of people's lives, and they just don't realize that we live this illusion a lot of times that we have so much more power over mm-hmm. outside things, when the irony is that the true power we have is within.
Mm-hmm.
And that is far more powerful than the power that we seek to control things on the outside of us. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people say before, you know, in response to the people who sort of get angry at the whole, you're powerless over whatever, whether it's alcohol mm-hmm. or whatever it is. You know, there's other programs that say it's just people, places, and things. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. Something that I've heard somebody say that I thought was very, it resonated with me a lot, was that powerless doesn't mean helpless.
No. Powerless, to me, can actually lead you to your greatest power. Because to me, admitting powerless is surrendering. And the word surrender, to me, equates to, like, the greatest power that you can possibly have.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting thinking about these things in our lives that we can't control, even if we'd love to believe that we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a real difference between our own choices and the outcome of whatever, the combination of our choices and other people's choices. So, you know, one thing that can be really helpful to keep in mind is that, especially when you're struggling with perfectionism, is that, you know, you always have a choice, and you also get to make a new choice when you get new information, right? When you get an outcome that you don't like. So you always get to make a new choice, and that's something that you can control. You can also have some degree of control over your interpretation of the outcome. And when I say some degree of control, our thoughts and our feelings, you know, I come from the way of thinking, it's not about controlling what thoughts come into our heads or feelings come into our bodies. You know, it's about being mindful of them. And then you always get to have a choice which thought you're going to listen to or which interpretation you're going to kind of center yourself around. So one thing that can be really powerful is, I love what you said about surrendering to your lack of control over the outcome and really centering yourself around the choice that you have to craft your own experiments, make your own decisions, and you know, regroup and interpret when outcomes happen that aren't kind of what you had in your mind.
Yeah, I once heard someone say, I'm not responsible for the first thought that comes into my head, but I'm responsible for the second one.
Wow, that's great.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, you, I think you hit the nail on the head, Carrie. It's like we all have our baggage, including us. I mean, you know, I say this probably every time I'm on the air, and I don't mind saying it. You know, coaches are not gurus. They're not perfect. We are human beings. We have our stories. We have our own baggage. Hopefully the good coaches are all out there working on their stuff and, you know, doing the hard work on themselves. But, you know, we have things that come up in our lives, too, and thoughts that come up into our head. And it's a choice at some point in time. Do I want to run with that negative thought or that thought that's probably not going to serve me, even if it's not negative? What if it's just not going to serve me? Do I want to run with that thought? Do I want to run with that anger? Do I want to run with that worry? Do I want to run? Or do I want to acknowledge it and go on to something else?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I find myself saying a lot lately to myself, to my clients, you know, is it's not you, it's everyone, right? And I think that kind of gets at what you were just saying about coaches, that it's not just you experiencing the sort of pains of procrastination or the desire for control sometimes over things that you can't control. And almost everybody wrestles with this at one point or another. And I think it's really important to hold the perfectionism compassionately and not judge it as something that you have to squash or, you know, people often, and I think I even sometimes say breakthrough procrastination, right? But there's another way to look at that too, which is just to sort of hold that procrastination with compassion and get curious about it and take care of it, right? Sort of listen to the thoughts that are coming up for you when you start to feel that perfectionism come up. What is it? What's at stake for you about this project that you're working on or about this conversation? What is it that you're really worried about? What is it that it really means for this to go perfectly or imperfectly? And if you can come from that curiosity and compassionate standpoint and know it's not you, it's everyone, you know, it's Oprah. Everybody deals with these feelings and these thoughts, and it's sort of what you choose to do with them that you have control over.
Bobby, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, well, the one thing, Carrie kind of covered it, but was I think that some of these thoughts of perfectionism or whatever they are, procrastination, you know, she talked about the acknowledgement and beyond the compassion level, which is pretty much in parallel with that, but I always share with my clients and try to live this, that whatever I'm feeling, even if it's a thought or a feeling that I'm not particularly attracted to and want to change, I do acknowledge it, because the mind and the body have that connection, and the acknowledgement says, okay, I hear what you're saying, and then embrace it, or be compassionate with it. Embrace it, give it its time, and then dismiss it. I think so often we, you know, start thinking negatively or start going down that role of perfectionism, and if we're in the learning mode to try to stop the perfection and controlling, you know, we shove the thought, you know, we're almost like rude. It's like, stop, get out of here. Or the feeling, push it down, instead of expressing, embracing, and releasing it to the universe, because that's where disease starts. We continually push down the emotions or negative thoughts that was like, ooh, I'm not supposed to have this. So instead of releasing it, we push it down. And then that starts to viscerally affect us in a physical way, and that's when disease starts setting in. So I think acknowledging and embracing, and then just literally allowing yourself to let it go, because the universe can handle all of that energy. It knows how to switch it all back into the positive stuff. It's our physical bodies that have the issue of holding it and then turning it into disease wherever it decides to settle. So it's, my comment was pretty much parallel with what Carrie was saying about, you know, being compassionate. I'm just all about embracing it and releasing it.
And, you know, I think it was Dr. Robin Smith, she was a psychologist that used to be on Oprah a lot. I can remember her saying one time, and I'm pretty sure it was her that said, you may as well have your feelings, because if you don't, they'll just sit and wait for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, and
that
Bobby,
so
you know,
that
not only does it kind of manifest in stress and in your body, but just the energy that those thoughts take on when they're, mm-hmm. you know, when you try to squish them in a box and they start banging at the lid of the box and they want to come yep. out, they're not going away, right? Rather than when you air them, and, you know, sometimes some of the words that I like to use are, you know, I hear you, thank you for sharing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
does anyone else
exactly.
have an idea?
yeah.
You know, are there any other approaches to this, or are there any other ways, you know, how else can I look at this situation? I acknowledge that I have this thought, and that's normal because I'm a person, right?
Yeah.
And the funny thing about feelings are, is even if you try and stuff them, they'll come out some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not even come out in the way that you what you're feeling. A lot of times it comes out as anger.
Mm-hmm.
And anger does, you know, some pretty crazy things to your body when you, you know, the chemicals and stuff. And anger can serve you at times. It certainly can. It can be a way of saying no, thank you, in a certain way. No, this is not acceptable. No, you can't do this. But if you sit with it for long periods of time, you are having a chemical rush through your body that isn't all that great for you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a moment and remind our listeners that if they would like to join in on our conversation today, they can do that by calling 646-716-9397. Again, that is 646-716-9397. I think, Carrie, I'm going to ask you this question. How much do you think that society plays in the role of perfectionism?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. You know, I think that one, the first thing that pops into my head when you ask that question is that we all wear our masks pretty well.
Mm.
And so that's sort of where this it's not you, it's everyone thing comes up, because so often we really think that people around us, you know, they got the memo, they got the manual, they know how to do this, and for some reason, you know, it's harder for me. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it right. I never got that instruction manual. And so I think sometimes when I hear, you know, think about society and interpret that as people around us, so often because we don't see the inner workings in other people's minds, we don't, you know, people tend to keep this stuff really guarded and really safe, not always share. You know, I'm scared. I feel like I'm not good enough. You know, I have a novel in me and I don't know how to get it out. Those aren't the things that we share at dinner parties or, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever event you might be at. And so that can kind of make the procrastination or the perfectionism amplified inside of you because it's secret. And that kind of it goes back to this idea we were talking about, you know, sticking the more negative thoughts in a box and trying to shove them down. Whenever anything is not allowed to be shared or kept secret, its power kind of can grow. So that's sort of what comes up for me. I'm so curious to hear your and Bobby's take on that question, though. What an interesting thing to ask.
Bobby, what's your take?
Well, I'm considerably older than the two of you. I've kind of grown past like a lot of the outside influencing and the mask wearing. However, everybody does it, and that's the thing I think that impacted me the most when you were talking, Carrie, is that why do we manifest in our minds that other people have it together, right? I don't know why, because every one of us are the same. We're the same but different, and some people can articulate things differently than others, but there is not one person on planet Earth that doesn't have that fear that's instilled in them with something. Because no matter how much money you have, how much success you've had, how much, growth, personal growth you've had, even how much sorrow or loss, destruction, whatever it might be in your life, there's still that, your mind still goes to, you know, what's next. Like, I've had some amazing mentors in my life, in my coaching life and in my corporate life, and, you know, I would look at them and think about them and think, wow, they have got it completely together. And when you get to know them on a more personal level, they have their doubts and fears just like everybody else. And so I think that, you know, looking at society as a whole like that we're all in the same fishbowl, it kind of, at least it takes the pressure off for me.
I find that, and this held true for myself and a lot of other people that I've come across, that we tend to compare our insides, what's going on inside of us, with the facade other people show us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've heard someone say, don't compare your insides with somebody else's outside. You'll always come up on the losing end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have no idea. Yeah, you just have no idea what's going on in people's lives, and because the mask is such a good way of putting it. People put on masks. We present a certain thing that we want people to see, and that we think, in my opinion, is expected of us. When I was asking sort of the question of society, I was thinking sort of in my head the ideas of like the glossy magazines, where all the models are airbrushed to within an inch of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody's sort of expected to be, you know, waist thin. And, you know, sort of the idea that you're supposed to be rich and you're supposed to be famous and you're never supposed to have a problem. And it's all such an illusion. I mean, how many famous people who have, overdosed on drugs or, you know, are in and out of rehabs or, you know, how many people... I think Janis Joplin would have been a good example of this, or somebody like Judy Garland, somebody that would stand up on a stage and just be adored by their fans,
mm-hmm.
but not be able to take it in. I'm sort of starting to understand that in life, the one thing that we all are so much afraid of is being ostracized, to being not part of the pack, to not being accepted. And I think that, you know, a lot of us don't show our true selves and don't let that vulnerability come out because we're so afraid that we're going to be rejected. And
mm-hmm.
the sad part about it is that if everybody sort of, and again, this is my opinion, but if everybody sort of found a safe way to sort of let themselves be shown and let the real real you come out, warts and all, we would probably not have so much anxiety in this world, and probably not so much procrastination, and probably not so much paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that true self, that vulnerable place is so often when people do reveal it, you know, when great leaders reveal it, that's so often the part that is our greatest gift or that allows people to connect to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love what you said about comparing our inside to someone else's outside. The fact is that almost always we only see the finished product of anybody's, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you're a writer, right, you see yourself sitting in front of your blank document and you know about all of your anxiety and you see yourself sort of, you know, in the proverbial, you know, crumpling up paper and throwing it on the floor. You don't walk into the bookstore and get to have that window into the backstories of all of these finished books, right, and sort of the anxiety and the perfectionism and all the things that came up for that, for those people. And, you know, talking about the title of this show being Embracing Progress Over Perfection, you know, that progress piece, it might be interesting for us to talk about that a little bit, because the blank slate can be a very scary place to be. And when we're so stuck in perfectionism and all we can see is other people's finished products, then no wonder we have a really hard time ever getting started. You know, when I first started, I write a lot. I have a lot of articles and blogging. And I remember that time so well before I had ever published anything. That was just terrifying. And, of course, when I would visit other people's blogs that I admired or that I personally learned from or that I really, you know, thought was just great, I didn't see their drafts folder. I saw what they put out to the world. And so I think it's really, it might be interesting for us to talk a little bit about that progress piece, about how we break through or you know, move through or move with perfectionism to actually create progress, to actually get moving forward on the goals that we have.
Well, so let's go ahead and use that as a segue to move into progress. Bobby, what is your view on progress, or your definition, or even how you move your clients into it?
Well, you know, progress again is interpretation, and you know, by definition, everybody has a little bit of a different definition of progress, but small, you know. I think when you use the word progress, it's kind of a progressive word. It's kind of a big word. So you really, right, it kind of leads you to, like, you don't usually progress to failure or progress to destruction. You progress to success and progress to work. To go into progress means you need to work. So you need to move out of your fear and work into, walk through that door of fear. So progress can be kind of scary. Progress can make procrastination look okay. Sometimes it is a little bit scary. So I think for me, I always try to break things down into tiny little pieces. And they can be tiny because every little step in the direction of what you're defining as your goal is progress. Not to put an amount or a measurement to it, I guess, because when I see or hear the word progress, my mind goes to big. My mind goes to, like it's progress is burdensome. So I always try to take those words and reframe them for my clients, especially put them into a light that is not quite so bright, so that your eyes don't have to squint at it. You can, like, look at it comfortably and, you know, embellish, embrace. I'm kind of one of those cushy coaches. I'm a big embrace and allow your mind to wrap itself around and acknowledge. And so, yeah, progress to me is, progress is a little bit of a harsh word to me, but that's my interpretation. So I always go at it carefully and respectfully and take little steps.
How about you, for you, Carrie?
Well, you know, I think that it's so interesting that, and I love that you just shared, Bobby, progress is a harsh word for you, because I think one thing that's so important is language is incredibly important, and
mm-hmm.
finding words that work for you that's really important. It's also important to for each person to define words for themselves. So, you know, a question you can ask yourself is, okay, what does progress mean to me? Or what's the word I prefer to use, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or what would it mean to succeed here? Because if your definition of success is something happening that's completely out of your control, like it depends on what the other person is going to do, or it depends on, you know, how many people make the decision to buy your product after you do your pitch or whatever it is, then you're setting yourself up for a situation where you can't succeed without other people responding in a certain way. So one thing you can do is really think about, how do I define progress, or how do I define success, and how can I, you know, take one little step to move forward, you know, and not be sort of so overwhelmed by that big picture. I think one great tip, if you're feeling really stuck and you want to start creating something, or maybe you're planning to start doing interviews, or, you know, there's just a number of examples, is to create a safe lab for yourself, almost like a laboratory where, you know, to use the blogging example, when I first started writing, the blank slate was so scary to me that I told myself I wasn't going to publish anything for 30 days. I was going to write every day for 30 days, and I knew that I was safe because I wasn't going to publish anything, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I would sit down, the audience was gone, and there was no fear around the idea that this was going to be immediately open to the public. So I think that finding words, finding language that really works for you, and creating small steps in a way that feels not like 0 to 60, right? Not like the highest stakes in the world, but just what's one little step that you can try out, almost like crafting an experiment, right? What's one little experiment that I can do today to move me a little bit forward?
Yeah, and I sort of see it as forward motion for myself. As long as I'm doing something along in the way that, you know, is towards the goal the long-term goal, and I try and be very gentle with myself in the sense of putting really strict timelines on it, because I don't really know what's going to show up. I don't really know how I'm going to feel about something. I don't know what obstacles are going to come into my way. I live with a planner. My partner is a planner. He plans everything. He thinks through everything. He thinks through every outcome. He thinks through, you know, and it works for him. It works for him in many, many ways. He's very, very successful at what he does. You know, he's created a great life for himself, a great life for us. But I'm so not a planner, and I've learned not to be a planner. It is a skill that I actually developed over the years, to sort of step back and let life do what life is going to do, and sort of decide what choices I want to make however life shows up. And that doesn't mean I don't have goals, and it doesn't mean I don't work towards things. It's just I've sort of let go of the idea of how it's going to happen, because many, many times in my own life, I wanted something to show up in a certain way, and maybe years later I got it, but it came in a completely different route than I thought that I was going to get it. And I think there was times when, had I just gotten out of my own way, it may have actually come to me faster. So I really, for myself, just need to always have forward motion, you know, because I can get myself into a spot where if I get myself overwhelmed, I just want to throw my hands in the air and quit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I, for clients, what I really like to do is I want to help them reframe what they're looking at. Because a lot of times we have a view of something and it's not really what's happening. So sometimes it's really just getting them to even, for a second, look at something and go, oh, there's a possibility that it could be something that I didn't think it was.
Yeah, you know, it's a normal human tendency to, we are so focused on seeing something come into our lives, you know, thing A come into our lives, and that's what we're looking for, and we get very attached to the idea that is the thing, that is the goal. So so much so that things B, C, D, and E, all of which might be awesome, can walk right by us. And we're so, Bobby, I think you used the word rigid in the very beginning of the show today. Mm-hmm. You know, we can be very rigid in what success looks like, what the perfect opportunity, what the perfect partner looks like, right? If we're looking for a romantic partner or the perfect job or whatever it is. And if we don't get it, then we sometimes can be in mourning for a very long time because we think, but it just walked by, right? That was it.
Yeah.
and now I'm screwed. You know, so I think that it's a really good point that you make, Tim, that, you know, so often, how could we know? Who are we really to know what all the possibilities are and what thing is perfect for us when we haven't even glimpsed so many of the possible outcomes or possible partners or possible, you know, jobs or whatever, possible insights that we might write about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw out a concept because we only have a little while left to actually chat. And I'm going to throw this concept out and let you guys, and this is actually not something we talked about before. I want to get your guys' reaction on it. I once heard somebody say that the imperfections in life are actually perfect because it is the imperfections of life that allow us to make choices. And if everything was always perfect, there would never be choices, and then we couldn't grow. Talk amongst yourselves.
So that's interesting. Imperfection allows us to make choices. How do you see that showing up?
Well, you know, what I always go back to is that place of vulnerability, because when we begin to define things as not perfect and having to move to a perfect place, that brings us to a place of feeling vulnerable, like we're going to have to make a change and everybody's going to see this change, and it makes us feel vulnerable. But it's that fear, that door of fear that we walk through. The other side is always so bright and shiny and amazing, and it's that false evidence appearing real. It's that fear factor. And but tripping through imperfection does bring you to the best place. You know, what do they say? You fail your way to success. You know, there is not a story of a successful person in this world that didn't have, and somebody mentioned this earlier, one failure after another. I'm fascinated with the story of Abraham Lincoln. I mean, he had failed marriages, he failed as a business person several times, and ended up being president of the United States. When I read his story, I'm like, really? This is who I'm reading about? So, yeah, I think we learn the most from being vulnerable and going through what we define as failure. Because what I define as a failure could very well look very successful to people on the outside.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, most people don't know that Babe Ruth, everybody knows him for being the home run hitter. He was also the most strikeouts.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yep.
Well, you know, it's not possible to avoid failure if you're going to do anything. If you're going to go after anything, it just goes back to control, right? We think that maybe if we prepare enough, we can avoid ever failing. If we're going to go after our dreams, if we're going to create the lives that we want, if we're going to make our contribution to the world, it's not possible to avoid failure. And it's sort of, what just popped into my mind is the idea of if you try to do anything, you're going to go after... you're going to get the little failures, right? Failures with a lowercase f. And those are those imperfections that allow us to make choices, right? Because they'll give us new information, we get learning, we get to craft a new experiment, we get to keep what we like and let go of what we didn't like. But then there's, like, the big failure, right? The big failure with a capital F of staying so stuck, never doing anything because we're so much in that place of perfection, right? So it's almost like... we have a choice. Do we want to dare greatly, as Brené Brown and Teddy Roosevelt would say, and go after whatever goals that we have and, you know, let our imperfections allow us to make choices? Or do we want to stay safe and try to kind of protect ourselves and control everything at the risk of that big failure of never moving forward, never doing what we really want to do?
And isn't it sort of ironic that the fear of all the little failures is what leads us to the big failures? And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to throw in here is that, you know, I've always seen success and failure. Well, not always. I got to say this is more recently. I've come to learn that success and failures are basically opposite sides of the same coin. So if you've got a quarter, heads is success, tails is failure. If you pick up a coin off the street, which side of the coin is more valuable than the other?
That's good.
You know, they just go together. Light and dark go together. Good and bad go together. They just all go together. It's that duality of life. I don't know how to close that up. But so you know, we are actually running out of time. So I am actually going to give each of you a chance to have any closing thoughts that you'd like on this. Let's start with you, Bobby.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that this topic it's kind of a healing. That's just kind of how I talk, a healing topic, because to begin to be very acutely aware of when you are being critical of yourself, because sometimes perfectionism turns to constantly criticizing yourself for not being there. And that constant criticism begins to develop negative feelings and negative thoughts. So, you know, my personal thought on this is to embrace your thoughts and allow yourself to accept the imperfections as one step closer to your goal or your success. So there's some words that I avoid in life, and perfect is one of them.
And Carrie?
Yeah, you know, I think that as hard as it is, and actually we were even talking a little bit about this before the show started, about how frustrating it can be to hear that we're perfect just as we are, or we're right where we need to be, when it just feels like our logical brain will not accept that, right? That's not true, right? If I was perfect, then I would have this, that, and the other thing, and I wouldn't have, you know, spilled toothpaste all over my shirt, and I, you know, I would have delivered that speech perfectly, and the list goes on. But you know, the one of the most valuable steps I think that we can all take for ourselves when we start to feel that perfectionism building, and when we're feeling really stuck in terms of progress, is to share with somebody, to find somebody that you can be vulnerable enough to talk to about this. And if you don't have somebody, contact one of us. We'll give you our contact information in a minute. But just finding somebody that you can talk through this with. You're not alone. You're not ever as alone as you think you are. And just like that person may be able to help you. Just find the littlest step to get started.
So why don't you go ahead and give your contact
information?
Oh, sorry about that. I talked right over you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead and give your contact information?
Sure. So, again, my website is carriespaulding.com, carriespaulding.com, and you can email me at carrie.spaulding@gmail.com, and you can also find me on Facebook as the 30-something coach and Twitter at Spaulding Carrie, and you can find, you know, all kinds of ways to contact me if you head on over to my website.
And Bobby, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Bobby Anderson, I'm the pain management coach, and you can find information on me at www.painmanagementcoach.com. I have free healing meditations on my website, and my complete contact information is on my website. Also on Facebook, Pain Management Coach, and Twitter at BobbyAnderson13. So, yeah, that's the best way to get in contact with me and learn about more about what I do.
Great. And again, my name is Tim Billiter. You can reach me on my website at DIYForYourSoul.com. That's DIYFORYOURSoul.com. If you want to email me, you can email me at info@DIYForYourSoul.com. I am on Facebook at Facebook.com/TimBilliterLifeCoach. I am on Twitter at Tim Billiter. I think think that probably covers all of it. And somebody once told me I really should spell my name because the way I pronounce it is hard for people to find it. So it's Tim, T-I-M, Billiter, B-I-L-L-I-T-E-R. Ladies, I am so happy that we did this tonight. I thought it was a great conversation, and I feel very blessed to have shared this time with you.
Same with you. Thank you so much, both
Same
of you.
Same here. Everybody have a wonderful, perfectly imperfect evening out there.
I love it.
And to our listeners, don't forget that right after this, you can head over to the International Life Coach Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com and listen to Mastering Your Emotional Intelligence. And that starts immediately. Thank you all, and have a good night.
Good night,
everyone.